Your Honor, we the jury find the defendant Sweet Tango Apples guilty on all counts of being the crispiest, sweetest, zestiest, most delicious tasting apple you can buy.
Order! Order in this courtroom! Bailiff, come back here. Where are you going?
I'm going with them. I want some Sweet Tango Apples too.
You love a great mystery, but not in the produce aisle. Be sure to reach for Sweet Tango, the most delicious tasting apple money can buy. Investigate where you can get yours at sweettango.com.
Hello, and welcome to Dining with Death, True Crime Tuesday. When I was a child, something terrible happened in Salt Lake City, Utah. I grew up in rural Cedar City, which is in the southern part of Utah. And this was big news, but as a child, I was unaware of this story. Then, when I was a teenager, I became part of my school's very small and prestigious singing group called the Madrigals. And with this group, I would often travel to Salt Lake City to perform at places like the state capitol or choir competitions. On one of these trips, we were checking into what was then the Shiloh Inn, a hotel. And the other kids in the choir began to talk about how the hotel was haunted because of what happened there. Now, my parents kept us very sheltered, and so did a lot of the other kids' parents in Cedar City. Other kids knew about things that I did not, and I definitely did not know about this story. As we rode the elevator to our room, one of the boys started talking about how a whole bunch of little kids had jumped off the top of this hotel, and the other choir members were kind of laughing and calling him a liar and telling him he was making it up. Except he wasn't making it up. And he wasn't a liar. Everything he was saying is true. This is the story of the Cult of Emmanuel. I'm your host, Stacy Lee. Let's get into it. Bruce Longo, who was born in Yonkers, New York, had just been released from service with the Marines, and he joined the Mormon Church. Bruce very quickly became a dedicated Mormon, acting as a youth group leader and as a Boy Scout troop leader. In 1960, at age 22, Bruce accepted a call to become a Mormon missionary, and he was sent to Uruguay to teach the doctrine of the Mormon Church to the people there. Later, Bruce's mission companion, a man named Skip Daines, would recall, Bruce was very, very excited and a very dedicated missionary. Not only that, he was successful in recruiting new members for the church. Bruce was intelligent and he was charismatic and he was incredibly devoted to his Mormon faith. Zealous might be a better word. There are reports that Bruce memorized the entire Book of Mormon. Now, I don't know if I believe that, but by all accounts, he was able to recite pretty much any scripture from the Book of Mormon, and he knew the book backwards and forwards. Bruce did not complete his 2-year Mormon mission. After 11 months in the mission field, he contracted hepatitis, and his health was very poor, so Bruce was sent home early. In the fall of 1961, Bruce enrolled as a student at BYU, Brigham Young University, which is located in Provo, Utah. Bruce was studying political science and he was studying Spanish. Just a few months after enrolling at BYU, around Christmas time, Bruce met Swedish student Margit Birgitta Eriksson, and the couple fell in love. Margit was known to be a quiet girl, someone who was naive and very impressionable, and she was flattered by the attention Bruce gave her. Bruce was considered handsome and important, and a lot of girls liked him. So for Margit, it was a big deal to get so much attention from someone so popular. Knowing what I know about psychopaths from doing what I do here, I believe Bruce saw Margit as someone who could be easily manipulated. Even if he wasn't consciously thinking that, his gut, his animal instinct, was attracted to Margit because she was so docile. The couple were married, and before Bruce graduated from BYU in 1965, they already had 3 children. Bruce had a group of very close friends at BYU that included Sterling Peacock, Gil Hibbing, and Paul Chipman. All 4 of the very young men were very religious and very devoted to the Mormon Church, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Always for transparency, some of you have heard this 1,000 times, but not all of you have. I am an ex-Mormon. I was in the church, born and raised, until I was 38. I just think it's important to mention that whenever I talk about the church. These men would often discuss their religious views when they were together, and the men confided in each other often. One night, as they were talking, Bruce told his friends that he had received a vision from God. In the vision, Bruce was told that he was going to become a prominent official and leader in the Mormon Church. Now, for those of you who have been in our community for a while, you know from previous episodes that in Mormonism, you are allowed to claim that you have personal revelation from God. You are allowed to tell others that God has spoken to you and given you direction, but you are not allowed to make claims that God has instructed you to take control over other people or over the church. But that's exactly what Bruce Longo did. Bruce began to write long and detailed letters to the leaders at the Mormon Church headquarters, and he also wrote letters to the Israeli Knesset. The Israeli Knesset is the governing legislature of Israel. In letters to both of those groups, Bruce Longo wrote that he was God the Father, and he was preparing for his coming out. In the letters to the Israeli Knesset, Bruce wrote, "I am the father of Jesus Christ that you slew. I am the only one that can deliver you. Without me, you will perish. I am the father of Israel, and the blood of Israel runs through my veins." In one of the letters Bruce wrote to the leaders of the Mormon Church, he informed them that Spencer W. Kimball, the current president of the church, who is also seen by Mormons as a prophet, was an evil imposter, and that he, Bruce, in fact, was the president of the Mormon Church. He wrote another letter in 1977 stating that Spencer W. Kimball was an evil shepherd and stated, quote, "Your people are perishing in their ignorance and unbelief." What many people did not know, because the Mormon Church keeps these things private unless the people involved choose to reveal them, is that Bruce Longo had been excommunicated clear back in 1969 for making these types of claims. But Bruce hadn't told anyone he'd been excommunicated. Now, in the normal world, everyone would just look at Bruce and say, you know, what a nut. But we're talking about cults, my friend. So, of course, Bruce gathered a small following. About 24 or so people truly believed that Bruce was the real prophet of the Mormon Church. Those followers were also then excommunicated from the Mormon Church for staying loyal to Bruce. Bruce then directed all of his followers to go with him to Manti, Utah, and they did. When they got there, they set up a commune and began living a communal lifestyle. Now, their faith was focused on Immanuel David. That's what they called it. Immanuel means God is with us. Jesus is also sometimes called Immanuel. David means beloved. So they chose Immanuel and David. Jesus is with us, the beloved. As the cult spent time in isolation in the small town of Manti, Utah, which is in central Utah, about 200 miles north from where I'm sitting right now, their beliefs became more and more extreme. Member Gil Hibben began teaching knife-making skills to the 24 members of the group, and then they began working on a very large sword. For who, you ask? For Bruce, who by this time had changed his name to Immanuel David. Immanuel David declared he was God, Jesus Christ, and the Holy Spirit all in one, which is unusual because Mormons do not believe in the Trinity. They believe that God, Jesus, and the Holy Ghost are three separate beings. So I find it interesting that Bruce, being a Mormon, decided to go with the Trinity. But, you know, I guess if you're going to be God, just roll yourself all into one and be like all the gods, right? If I was going to be a god, I'd be that elephant with all the arms. I like that one. Immanuel David's followers believed him, and he vowed to, quote, "lop off thousands of heads if that was what was required in order to take his seat at the head of the Mormon Church." We are lopping off heads now. Immanuel David then proclaimed that a great cloud was going to descend on the Mormon temple in downtown Salt Lake City, and a bolt of lightning would come from the sky and split the temple in half. The temple would then be consumed completely by fire. David then said that Mount Timpanogos, which is this enormous mountain that sits about 40 miles outside of Salt Lake City, would somehow be supernaturally transported to the town of Manti. I don't understand, Immanuel, sir. I don't. Now, there is a lot of lore in Mormonism around Manti, Utah. And for decades, up until 2019, when it was finally shut down, the Mormon Church put on a show called the Mormon Miracle Pageant. I was taken to this outdoor pageant held on a big grassy hill when I was about 13. I don't remember much of the pageant because I was too busy being assaulted by the different boys in my ward. That's a story for another day. But anyway... Oh, those religious boys are such little closet pervs. Sometimes they are. Anyway, as I laugh about my childhood trauma, Manti is a place with a lot of Mormon lore, and it does most definitely attract some people with very fringe beliefs. Now, police and the Mormon church leaders were aware of Emmanuel David and his claims because some of them had been violent. Emmanuel David was a 300-pound bear of a man, and he would often show up at Temple Square in Salt Lake City with his followers. The group would be told to leave, but they were never arrested and no violence ever occurred. Emmanuel David then began to travel around to Washington State, to Montana, and to Nebraska with his followers in order to preach his own version of the gospel. The men in the group began to change their names as well. Sterling Peacock became Matthias David. Paul Chipman became Jonathan David. And then, before long, you know what time it is. It's time for the cult leader to start having sex with all the other men's wives. We can't have a cult without lots and lots of sex for the one who leads it. It wouldn't feel right. So Jonathan David, formerly Paul Chipman, now without his wife, settled in Spokane, Washington, still believing in Emmanuel David, who's taken his wife. He opened a karate studio and started sending all of the proceeds from that business to Emmanuel David. By this time, Emmanuel and his wife, who had changed her name from Margit Brigitta Erickson to Rachel David, had 7 children. They needed to support those kids, and the members of the cult were going to have to make that happen because God doesn't have a job. He doesn't have a mortgage. He has worshipers, and Emmanuel David was going to ensure that his worshipers took care of all of his needs. June 1975. Emmanuel David, along with his wife, again now calling herself Rachel David, and their 7 children move into the Red Lion Inn in Missoula, Montana, a motel. The family took up permanent residence there. Employees at the hotel later said that they never saw the family using the pool, and they never went out of their room except on Sundays. And when they did, Emmanuel David would walk at the head of the family, and the family would trail behind him, literally like a mother duck and her ducklings. The children did not speak, and they kept their heads down. The boys all had their long hair braided like their father's, and the girls wore their hair like their mother's. When the maids were allowed in to clean the room, they would find lots and lots of beautifully drawn landscape art pieces done by the children. They drew in charcoal and in watercolor and made a lot of paintings of nature. The family was obviously strange, and some of the employees worried about the children, so much so that they called the police. The police would later tell the press, there wasn't anything we could do. The kids were clean and well-nourished, they were well-behaved, and the parents claimed they were homeschooling them. But I did love what one police officer said at the time. He said, years ago, we'd have had groups come in and yank those kids away from these wackos. But now, everything is a big philosophical discussion. So, very much an old-school take from that officer there, right? Once settled, Emmanuel David had a vision, because of course he did. His 3 friends, now Matthias, Jonathan, and Peter, were really the archangels, and so Emmanuel renamed them Michael, Raphael, and Gabriel. It was like a full-time job to remember what your name was that week in this cult. The names were always changing. And I'm just picturing Ninja Turtles because that's where my mind goes. Emmanuel David then began to preach that the federal government was about to collapse. That's a favorite teaching for these Cocoa Puffs. And if you think I'm wrong, look at how many of them today are preaching that, almost 50 years later. Emmanuel David promised that after the government collapsed, he would be the one to save the Republic and become its new leader. So he's instructed his archangels to sell their karate studio. Maybe they were really the Ninja Turtles. Wait a minute. Is ninja and karate the same thing? I am very ignorant to that world. Anyway, they sell this studio in Spokane and head to Washington, D.C. in order to await the government's collapse there. Emmanuel David gave each of his archangels a few hundred dollars and sent them to D.C., where they quickly burned through their money and began living on the streets as homeless men. Even this did not diminish their faith in Emmanuel David. They kept in contact by making collect calls to their leader, and they awaited further instruction from him. Emmanuel David then took his family and left the Red Lion Inn in Missoula, Montana, with an unpaid bill of $6,000. And yeah, I don't know how that happens, but they returned to Utah. How does a hotel let somebody rack up a $6,000 bill? So as the archangels live as paupers on the street, the David family was staying in a $100 a night hotel, using the money from the sale of the karate studio and tithing checks from several members who had jobs. After a year with the archangels in Washington, D.C., and Emmanuel David and his family in Salt Lake, he instructs the archangels to return to Salt Lake City because he had some big news. Ugh, we are just completely off the rails at this point. Emmanuel David said he had obtained the original golden plates on which the Book of Mormon was written. In Mormon theology, the church's founder, Joseph Smith, claims he was given a set of golden plates on which were written scriptures that became the Book of Mormon. Joseph Smith claimed that after he wrote down what was on the plates, an angel took those plates back up to heaven, and that is why no one has ever seen them. Well, Emmanuel David claims he has now been given these plates by God. So the archangels returned to Salt Lake City, and guess what? You are going to be shocked, I know. Emmanuel David did not, in fact, have a set of ancient golden plates with writings on them. He informed his followers that, wait for this, he was the plates. He himself, his body, his mind were the golden plates. This was too much for Archangel Raphael, aka Paul Shipman, and he dipped out. He went back to Washington, D.C. and kept working at the lumberyard where he'd gotten a job. He saved up his money, bought a motorcycle, rode it to Albuquerque, and opened another karate studio. And this is where the FBI gets involved. Surprisingly, law enforcement had been keeping a pretty close eye on this group. I say surprisingly because this is the 1970s. There was so much going on back then that it's amazing cops could do much of anything. But the FBI had been watching, and it wanted to know how Emmanuel David and his family were able to afford staying in these expensive hotels for months on end. The FBI approached Matthias David, formerly Sterling Peacock, and he was willing to talk. Problem is, what he said got him indicted by a grand jury. Matthias David had been bilking people in Washington, D.C. for tens of thousands of dollars by telling them that his young daughter had cancer, and this is, in fact, a crime. The FBI prosecuted Matthias David for wire fraud, accusing him of concocting hard luck stories in order to steal money from people. Once the FBI had this conviction secured, they went after Emmanuel David on the same charges, plus charges of tax evasion. I'm also assuming that the hotel in Montana has reported him for not paying his $6,000 bill. Now, that, of course, would be probably a civil case, but still. I guess it could also be criminal if it was considered theft of services, but I'm not sure how that was handled. This cult of Emmanuel hadn't paid taxes of any kind since its creation almost a decade earlier, and that was a big problem for the FBI. Emmanuel David was brought in for questioning, and interviewing agents could immediately see that he was not just angry, but furious and indignant. How dare they question God? How dare they accuse him of breaking man's law, something he felt was so beneath him? That was his attitude. But as the interviews and the investigation wore on, Emmanuel David wore down, and although it took some time, it seems he began to realize that he was in some very serious trouble. And when delusional, narcissistic egomaniacs find themselves trapped in a corner that they can't get out of, very often someone is going to die. July 31st, 1978. 39-year-old Emmanuel David, formerly Bruce Longo, awakens at his suite inside the International Dunes Hotel in Salt Lake City that just after these events became the Shiloh Inn. I think it's now a Holiday Inn or a Hilton, if I'm not mistaken. Emmanuel David leaves his wife and seven children in their hotel room, rides the elevator to the lobby, and walks to his truck in the parking lot. He then drives that truck up into a canyon near Salt Lake City and pulled out a roll of duct tape. He used the duct tape and some other materials to pipe the exhaust from his truck directly into the cab of the vehicle. He turned on the truck and sat in the driver's seat, breathed in the carbon monoxide, and closed his eyes for the last time. Emmanuel David, self-proclaimed God, Jesus, and the Holy Ghost, was dead by his own hand. A few hours later, the phone inside the hotel suite at the International Dunes Hotel rang. Rachel David answered it. On the other end was a police officer who informed Rachel, now 38 years old, that her husband was dead. He had taken his own life. The police officer talking with Rachel was surprised by her reaction. She was upset, but she immediately began talking about how she would continue to take care of their seven children. How on earth was she going to pay the hotel bill and the food bills? The family had been ordering takeout for months, often ordering from a very expensive French restaurant in Salt Lake at the time. Rachel seemed more concerned about those things than she was about the fact that her husband had taken his own life. 3 days passed, and we can only imagine and guess what Rachel David had going through her mind during those days. She was now all alone in the world. The man who was not only her husband, but the man she believed to be God, was dead. His followers had abandoned them or had been forced to stop sending them money because they were either in jail or out of cash. It seems that this was all simply too much for Rachel. Did she ask for help? Did she tell the police she was going to need assistance? Did she reach out to a shelter? No. Rachel David did the absolutely unthinkable. At 7:20 in the morning on August 3rd, 1978, Rachel David opened the sliding glass door on the 11th floor balcony of this hotel and told her children to come outside and stand on it with her. One by one, she instructed and forced all seven of her own children to climb over the railing of the balcony and jump to their deaths. The youngest children were simply thrown. The middle children were forced to climb over the rail, and then Rachel and the older children pried their fingers from the railings. I hope I'm wrong and there is a hell. I really do. Witnesses standing below reported that the children clung to Rachel. Oh, my hell. Clung to Rachel screaming, and it was later found that they had bruised fingertips and broken fingernails from trying to hold on to their mother. Fuck this story. Whew. Passerbys on the ground were screaming at Rachel to stop what she was doing, but she did not. With a crowd gathering below them, each younger child fell from the balcony, and then the oldest children stood up on folding chairs that they had placed on the balcony by the railing and jumped. I don't know how many hours I've spent thinking about this story since I heard about it, how many times I've envisioned their little feet stepping over the railing. I imagine their little hearts pounding and their eyes wide, and it just makes me very angry. Each of the seven children fell over 100 feet, and when all of the children were gone, Rachel David climbed over the railing and sat on it. She paused for about 30 seconds as the now angry crowd below, after watching the children and watching what she had done, yelled up at her, "Jump, bitch, jump." After pausing for a few more seconds, Rachel David pushed away from the railing and fell to her death. I found some audio, most likely from a radio program, of witnesses and reporters speaking about the event.
Lifted them up and dropped them over. Then the last person paused for a while and then just went over the edge.
I kept yelling, "Oh God, stop him," but then we could see some of the observers up on the platform there.
All were members of the Emmanuel David family. The father, Emmanuel, committed suicide by asphyxiation Monday. His body was found yesterday in a pickup parked up a canyon. When deputies last night told his wife, Rachel, about the suicide, she said it didn't surprise her that her husband had said he was ready for the next world. Emmanuel considered himself the true prophet, the Messiah, God. His family and a few close friends believed him. This morning, the mother and the three children who voluntarily jumped apparently decided to join him in the next world.
Immediately, people all around the hotel began calling 911, and paramedics arrived to the unthinkable scene very quickly. We can only imagine the shock and horror they felt when they realized this wasn't a single jumper. This wasn't a suicide, but 8 jumpers. And I won't say suicides. I won't say 8 suicides because I don't believe any single one of those kids chose to do what they did. It was murder. There might have been the older ones that didn't put up a fight, but they didn't have a choice in this matter. That is the type of control that these people are under. And as the paramedics went from body to body, oh my hell, they were shocked to find that some of the children were still alive. This is a police diagram of how the bodies fell. 4 of them landed on the roof of the coffee shop attached to the hotel. One of the young boys was in the gutter. As you can see, there are only 5 bodies in this diagram, and that is because the three that were found to be still alive had been rushed to the hospitals. 2 of the youngest children had somehow survived the fall, and they were rushed to 2 different area hospitals. Both of them died around 10 a.m. that morning. The oldest child, the 15-year-old, who was also named Rachel, had also survived the fall. I found a clip of audio which I believe to be a doctor or hospital representative speaking about Rachel's injuries.
She just literally mangled both of her legs. All the bones in both of the legs are broken. She fell astraddle of something and she split her pelvis and literally tore right up into the abdominal cavity. She sustained some abdominal injuries, including a ruptured spleen. She also has a slight bruise on the lung, and she also has a fractured shoulder that's an open fracture.
Rachel miraculously survived, not just a few hours as her siblings did, but she lived. As far as I could find, she is still alive today. From the date of this terrible event, she has been in a wheelchair. She has brain damage and many other injuries, and she now lives with family members who take care of her. The city and then the nation were shocked to hear of these horrific events. I was actually quite surprised that I couldn't find more news footage or newspaper articles about this story. There isn't much online, and I kind of get the impression that the event was just basically too awful and too terrible to be spoken about much after it happened. The news and the media was very different back then, softer in some ways, and I think this was just a story that people didn't want to think about. A year passed, and then many years passed, and the story just kind of faded into history. Sadly, the cult did not. I hate to report this to you, my friends, but not only is the cult still in existence, it has grown. In 1993, the Deseret News, which is a large paper in Utah, interviewed the sole survivor, Rachel David. She claimed that she still believes her father is God, and she is still waiting for him to return to the earth. Even though Rachel has brain damage, she told reporters, "I remember my father said he will be back. I know he will. My father never lied." Even confined to a wheelchair, Rachel has attempted to take her own life on numerous occasions because she believes that's what she was instructed to do and that's what she believes she should still do. The remainder of the cult, according to the latest information I could find online, dates back about 8 years, and it's now in Spokane, Washington. As late as 2000, there were 5 members of the cult claiming to be the reincarnated biblical figures Moses, Abraham, Adam, Eve, and Noah. Not at all surprisingly, the cult practices white supremacy and they are anti-Semitic. They used a published document they call a testimonial letter, which is signed by all of the members of the group. And in that letter, they state that white people are the real Israelites and true children of God. They also claim the Star of David belongs to Emmanuel David and not the Jews. My hell, find a new song. This one is so played out. I just get so tired of these wackos and their hate. It's exhausting to me. Back in 2000, 64-year-old Jacob David, Rachel's brother and Emmanuel's brother-in-law, sat down with a reporter in his home in Aurora, Colorado, and told that reporter, quote, "We are Israelites from the lost tribes of Israel. Remember Matthias? He told this same reporter that he does not consider what Rachel David did to her children to be a crime." That's not surprising. He said, quote, "What I believe in is David and Rachel and their family, they could not be apart. When David left, they left with him. That was their choice and a shock to us." Was it shocking, Matthias? Was it shocking to you that children were thrown over a balcony? My Lord, the level of disdain I have. My dad keeps saying, are you going to cover that story? It's really interesting. And I know it is. And I love the fact that he remembers it and keeps asking me if I'm going to cover it. But I hate these people so much. It's hard for me to cover it and hide the disgust because I don't care to hide it. The reporter that covered the cult back in the kind of mid-2000s said the family of David has tried to recruit back several former members who are now living in Utah and Kentucky. But those former members want nothing to do with the group and said they regard it as dangerous. Emmanuel David's brother became a police chief in Auburndale, Florida, and told the Spokesman Review of Spokane, quote, I think my brother actually believed in his own mind that he was God. He was that far off base. He was a very flawed mortal, so for him to have gained this kind of influence over people is amazing, particularly for it still to exist. Is it amazing, though, for a man this far out of touch with reality to gain influence and win followers? I wish it were. Every day when I open TikTok or read the news headlines, I am reminded of something that I find very, very disturbing. There are far too many people on this earth all too willing to deny facts, truth, and science and trade what is known for what is unknown and fake. There are far too many people who are willing to believe the unbelievable, and there are far too many people so lost that fantastical ideas of magic beings and supernatural powers and conspiracies are what they choose to cling to. So while, yes, this is an amazing and incredible story, it is one that I fear is much like those we will be hearing more of in the future. Thank you for joining me today on Dining with Death, True Crime Tuesday. Please hit the like button if you enjoyed the video and subscribe to my channel if you want to see more from me. The growth is just very, very slow. YouTube has so much content. It's so hard to get seen. And although I am grateful for every single one of you, I've got to have a little growth explosion here if I'm going to keep going. Please share the channel, tell people about it, whatever you can do. And if you really want to support the community, join my Patreon. I'm Dining with Death on Patreon. And if you want to give a dollar a month, that helps. Our end goal is to be able to donate money to police departments that have cold case DNA in storage that cannot be tested because there's no money to test it. We want to help with that. We want to get those perpetrators' DNA in the database. Thank you so much for being here, for being part of our amazing community, and for spending a little of your day with me. Stay safe, my friends, and be kind to each other. And I'll see you next time on Dining with Death. Bye.
Your Honor, I'd like to present to the ladies and gentlemen of the jury with Exhibit B, a bag of Sweet Tango apples.
Mmm, boy, these apples are delicious.
And zesty? Mmm, and sweet.
Best I ever tasted.
Your Honor, I object.
Overruled. Court dismissed. We need to recess to the grocery store for some Sweet Tango apples.
You love a great mystery, but not in the produce aisle. Be sure to reach for Sweet Tango, the most delicious tasting apple money can buy. Investigate where you can get yours at SweetTango.com.